Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group. Your host is the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer of the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group. I am your host, the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer at the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld. And today, we are joined by a very special guest, Mark Thompson. Mark is a New York Times best-selling author of three books, including Success Built to Last. His most recent book is called Admired, 21 Ways to Double Your Value. Mark is also a business thought leader who has worked closely with some of the world's greatest entrepreneurs. He is an innovation leadership columnist for Inc., Forbes, and Fast Company, and an executive coach to C-level leaders in Fortune 500 companies in a wide array of industries. Mark, it is great having you with us today.
Thanks for having me along. I appreciate it, and I'm so impressed with how you're inspiring people to think differently and take a whole new approach to the sales and behavioral process. So delighted to be here.
Excellent. All right. Well, you know, let's jump right into it. You know, one question that actually numerous people have asked me to pose to you, and I think it's a great one, is that, you know, you have been in a unique position to interact with so many great leaders like Richard Branson, Steve Jobs, Herb Kelleher, Warren Buffett, and Bill Gates. What characteristics have you found make a leader great? What's the difference between good and great leaders?
You know, it's a really great privilege to be able to talk to such a great variety of people who have achieved. And so what we did is we looked globally at people who have just had high impact in their field of profession for 20 years or more. In other words, we're truly having the success equation in a built-to-last way, because as you know, it's one thing to kind of make your sales quota for this year. It's another thing to be able to build an organization that continues to deliver in the chaos and competitive environments that we're all living in. So what I did is kind of a Napoleon Hill. I went out there and met with some of the highest achievers, the people who are self-made billionaires, as you pointed out, folks like Richard Branson, people who didn't come from privilege but were self-made, had time with Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and the rest, and then also people in other fields and professions who've had an opportunity to be carving out maybe a new way of doing something that had impact for decade after decade. And what we found was really common to every last one of these people. And as you know, even in behavioral sciences, it's hard to get, you know, 100% on any sort of prediction. But this was a correlation that was just mind-boggling. We found that every one of these people who had the long-term success equation really had three things going for them, that they had a very clear sense of what they were trying to achieve in terms of their overall guiding purpose. What kind of company or cause or customer do they really want to have impact on? In other words, something that was kind of bigger than they are, that wasn't just limited to their interests, but they felt that if they step back from it, they could say, you know, we built that together and it made a difference. It could be a new way of perhaps doing a business and a new approach to it. Jeff Bezos feeling like he could reinvent how retail was done and create a different kind of customer connection online that you wouldn't get in a store. Or it could be a person who had wanted an impact on creating a government. We talked to presidents and we talked to Nobel laureates and so forth. So the first P of the three Ps, we found actually 36 elements that drove success, but these were the three that everybody needs to just have in their back pocket. And we can all remember three, and they really dominate. And this first one really is driving purpose, that cause. To be driven so much, for example, even on those days when you just aren't feeling it, you know, when you don't want to get up and feel like a leader today. I mean, we don't always feel that way, right? So what is it going to be big enough that's bigger than you that kind of transcends that a little bit? We call that letting the cause have charisma. Maybe you don't feel like you have charisma today. Maybe you don't have the full mojo. But you got to go up and do this because, damn it, this team matters. These people matter. Or this cause or company matters. So that's the first one. The second one is performance. This is the thing that's probably most easily aligned with what we talk about when we think about sales and when we think about achieving our objectives. All of us, hey, it's great to have this highfalutin cause, but if you don't produce, if you don't set expectations, if you can't make promises and deliver on those promises and then start to establish a track record of delivering on those promises, that's just as important. These are all three of these P's are ands, not ors. So you've got to have that purpose right, and then you've got to be willing to deliver on the promise, which is, in this case, we call it performance. And that's probably what you'd see mostly in the standard business school texts or among sales training organizations saying, so how do we make commitments? How do we set expectations in a way where we can make it, in a sense, an emotional and personal and professional contract with the customer that says, hey, we are going to take responsibility, we're going to be responsible, and then you can be reliable enough. And by those three R's, reliable, responsible, and repeatable, these three ideas really come together to deliver on the performance. And then the final P is passion. And a lot of people talk about passion and kind of get those confused with the first two that I've just talked about, but it's very unique. Passion is the thing that you'd kind of do, and I hate to say this among sales professionals right now. I mean, we're all driven by having outcomes and achieving big things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff in your life that's a passion that you'd almost secretly do for free, right? You know, is this something that makes you feel alive? Is this something that you would do? We found there was a number of criteria to define passion, which we can talk about if you'd like. But it seems to be mission critical that the people we found that were able to deliver year in and year out actually really gave a damn in a very personal way about what they were trying to sell. Gosh, it just feels so different when you aren't being pitched as a customer.
Yeah.
When instead you've got this passionate person who believes in the product, can do the educational sale, and understands, you know, how people, you know, how the brain is wired to buy, which is, you know, I don't want to be pitched. I wanted to be approached by somebody who's actually going to listen to my needs, who's passionate about helping me as a customer solve problems and help me be successful. Because you get success by giving it to your customer. And when you make your customer successful, then, hey, they just can't wait to buy. And they can't wait to come back and keep buying if they believe that, if they really buy that that's what you're all about. So this was what really differentiated the kind of the good from the great. Those that have these three disciplines, the sense of purpose, the sense of passion, and then, of course, the willingness to deliver on that performance.
Those are some really great insights and some really powerful, very practical takeaways that are applicable, as you mentioned, to not only sales professionals and sales leaders, but anyone in business.
Right.
I guess maybe a question that I'm sure many of our listeners would have is, how do you do that? Because a leader needs to, you know, shape the, you know, convey the purpose and kind of monitor and inspire performance and help also inspire passion and hire the right people that are passionate about this cause. How can leaders create a culture that help people perform at their best to live out these three P's?
Well, what we found is that the definition of a true leader is someone who recruits and develops other leaders. In other words, is looking for other people whose passion and purpose, whose three P's are very equivalent to their own or aligned with that. I mean, part of the problem is we do kind of force things into, you know, the proverbial square peg into a round hole. We do because we have a lot of priorities. We have to make money. We have to make a living. We want to feel like we're significant and doing something that's important to ourselves, the community, and to our family. And sometimes when we let the world kind of rule or judge too much as to what we want to do next, we can make choices that might be less than optimal in terms of what we should be out there selling or leading. But we found fundamentally that the folks that were built to last, the leaders who were able to inspire others to do so, were actually looking for other people who had that were driven by those same set of values. And I think one of the things that kind of blew me away when we did our last book, because a lot of people are kind of interested, you know, how can, as a leader and as an individual, frankly, how can I be respected, admired, and valued for what I think I can deliver to you, for what I think I can contribute to this organization and what I've been able to achieve for that organization? How can I truly be valued, admired, and respected? And so what we did is we talked to the people who are really engaged on teams, and we asked them, you know, what were the characteristics of a leader, and did they have a sense of, you know, whether they felt valued by those leaders or not? Because we're trying to get under the soft underbelly here, behaviorally, kind of like, what are you actually looking for in your leader? Well, we find that they wanted those characteristics we've all talked about, but it's interesting. A lot of people felt that they were undervalued. I mean, I don't know about you, but have you ever felt overvalued?
Not often, right?
Not often enough, right? And so if you don't feel overvalued, well, okay. But undervalued, yeah, probably. So how does that feel? So we asked them, well, as compared to maybe your boss, you know, do you feel fully valued by her or him? And they did give that maybe a 6. And then when it came to family, they might give that, you know, a 7 or 8, a little better score. Mm. So then we asked another question, and this kind of reveals where you're headed with your question. That was kind of revelational for ourselves. So we said, okay, so you feel undervalued by the people that you think are important, what we call in our study your MVPs, your most valuable people, the people who drive your success. These are the people who, whose judgment you care about when you want to be valued, right, or considered a leader. So what we said, so we're going to reverse this on you. How much do you actually know about what those people really value? Have you asked? Have you found out? Have you studied? Have you watched them? How much do you really know about that particular customer? And it's interesting. They scored it lower. You know, it was much lower. You know, down into the 2s and 3s. They don't really know that much about what the people who they would love to have be judged by really value in terms of how they achieve their own sense of success. So I'd say the big differentiator is that you need to go that extra mile and not assume you know, not just think about the product that you want to sell, but really think about the solution that the customer is looking for in their life or their work or wherever you're trying to align with your product or service sale, and really think very carefully about, do you understand the profitability of that customer? Do you know what's going to make him or her live or die in their marketplace? Do you understand what the dynamics are or pressures or competitive nature is that they are seeing? Do we know how they're going to be evaluated by their boss or valued by their boss? You know, this, we always talk about really getting to know the customer, but it's a surprise to me how often we don't really take that far enough and really dig in deep. The more you know about the customer, the more you know what drives their value and success in the marketplace, the more they're going to feel heard, feel understood, feel valued, and therefore reciprocate by, you know, giving you the deal, giving you the business.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and you're hitting on just a really important part of selling and really life in general, which is that perspective taking of really understanding another person's perspective. And that is one thing that there are so many research studies in behavioral science that have verified that the more we can understand the perspective of another person and really their buying criteria and how they're judged by their supervisor, how they win, the more we can better meet their needs, the more effective we are and more we're able to influence in positive and successful ways.
Yeah, it is a very powerful idea, because in life and in work, we actually, because of efficiency and time pressures and so forth, we make up so many assumptions about what our partner, our boss, our customer, our daughter, our son, our spouse is thinking, or what they, quote, ought to be thinking in the frame of reference of the world or the soup that we're swimming in. And so I'm constantly surprised, amazed, and often inspired by how differently people can see the world who are standing in the same room. It's like when you hear the stories of those triplets who take 3 different directions, even though they were raised by the same 2 parents, the number of viewpoints and how something is perceived as, you know, that's a great benefit of the product or that's a horrible implication of the product is so individual, and you can't really assume. And so I think one of the most surprising and rewarding parts of the journey that I've been on, when I've asked all these successful people, you know, what are the common characteristics, this is where it all splits into 100 different directions. People say, you know, how can I have Bill Gates' life or something? And the truth of the matter is you can't. Because Bill Gates pursued that life. You have to have your incredible life, your incredible future. And so leaders who connect with employees do walk around and, you know, find out what is it that person cares about the most, help reward them in ways that they might value. I mean, for one person, the way you might motivate, you know, one set of teammates would be, look, if you get this done, you can get out of here at 5 because I know you want to be there to the Boy Scouts meeting with your kid. And for someone else, it might be, you're going to be at the top of the leaderboard here, and of all the divisions, you're going to be number 1, in other words, driven by winning. There are many different value sets that people have, and it's not like they're wrong or right. It's more a matter of you get paid well in loyalty and motivation when you take the trouble to find out what it is.
Those are great insights, because leadership is above all things, it's relational. And I think that's the root of what you're speaking to there, is tending to those relationships, because, boy, there's so much research on how impactful a manager or a leader is to those he or she serves. And even the attitude that a manager can come in with will infect everyone else in the room. And so really tending to that, and like you mentioned, that perspective taking of understanding the perspective of other people, that is the foundation of effective leadership.
Yes, absolutely. And as you say, the research has been very compelling on this. The number one qualifier that people describe in terms of their happiness at work is their relationship with their boss. And that makes, I mean, if the company grates, but that relationship with the boss sucks, it just colors everything. And and also, I don't think we realize that as a boss, if you're playing the role of a leader now and you're wondering how you're impacting the people around you, you sometimes wonder, because they're not always taking the orders that you're giving, so you're wondering if you're being heard. But the truth of the matter is, what they are really looking for, first of all, is often what you say feels more to them like shouting than anything else. So if you do start to listen more than direct and find out what causes them to take action, and then give them some of those incentives in connection with the goal that you want, you in a sense kind of do discriminate in a very, very remarkable way in the office. You need to discriminate around people's values in the way that motivates them and engage them in a very personalized way. If there's any customization that you need to do as a leader, it's actually quite a bit of customization. You actually do treat different people differently. Some people, you know, they're like a linebacker on the squad, and unless you're speaking in a raised voice, they just can't hear it. And others, you look at them cross-eyed, and they're going to go run in the corner and cry. So, and they both might be great performers, right? And so being sensitive to the fact that as a boss, you have a disproportionate amount of power as a leader, and that if you really want to move them, it's not going to be by sending a memo, and it's not going to be about sending out a report, and it's not going to be about lining them all up and like a firing squad, telling them what their marching orders is. It's going to be about really planning with each of them what kind of incentives and values will really drive them to get their work done. And that makes all the difference in the world. If they have that relationship with you, they might march that extra 20 miles every day because they want to please you. But you've got to be worth pleasing. And that can often be its own reward.
Yeah, that is a powerful insight. That's a great takeaway, too, for everyone that is in leadership or even aspires to be in leadership, to begin to set that philosophy of leadership, because the philosophy dictates the methodology of how you execute it, and to think about leadership as relational and understanding the perspective of those that you lead and treating them. That's a great point. Treating them as individuals, that is something that is rarely talked about, but that is insight that every leader should take seriously and begin to think about and start to execute on. I know our time is running thin here, so one final question that I wanted to pose to you, Mark, and that is that your work has impacted me very powerfully, as I mentioned to you before we went on air here, is your book, Success Built to Last. And in that book, you write about something that you've talked about a little bit in implication, and that is the silent scream. And it's such a powerful concept and a powerful word picture. Can you maybe share with our listeners what that is and why it matters?
The look at passion that most people take ends up being one where we tend to not take our passions actually serious enough. There is a there seems to be that transition in time as a kid. When we were just talking about this the other day, as we took our daughter to a summer program at Yale, and we were talking about how playful our 16-year-old was still able to be, because we never took the toys away in the midst of just adding more challenges and opportunities for her to grow and change. And so we're having this wonderful relationship with the teen, which that by itself ends up being a remarkable experience as a parent. And it's because she's never had to be bound and gagged and with her passions diminished. Mm. And we found that this was one of the characteristics of these great leaders, that if you're going to be good at something, that's one thing. If you want to be great at it, you really do got to love it. People can tell.
Yes.
And you can tell. And it creates all sorts of levels of resilience. So it matters enormously. It's been given a lot of lip service because there is just so much thirst for getting in touch with our passions. We're all feeling very dehydrated in our jobs every day unless we are getting a steady dose and being able to drink in our passions. And what we found is that the silence cream came because we often were doing what we should rather than what we can. We end up being kind of forced in a direction, or life serves us up a series of choices where we take a pretty conservative route, and we don't listen to those passions that are screaming, that are bound and gagged in the basement, and keep putting them down. That people say, well, I don't really know what I'm passionate about. Well, the truth is probably, as you look at it closely, and if you gave yourself time to take it out for a spin, you do know what you're passionate about. You're just so afraid of it messing up the kind of conservative, stable nature of your life. And don't feel that you can make money that way. There's 100 reasons. You wouldn't be respected by peers, your community, your dad. There's just so many reasons to say, you know. So I look at my life, for example, and I wanted to be I always was interested in communication. My parents were worried about a liberal arts major not being able to ever feed himself. And it's interesting. I ended up being able to combine a passion for business and communication and journalism, you know, a profession that often doesn't make a lot of money, with one that could. And putting those two skills together, I've felt a real driving force in my life coming together. We found that most people who had this success that was built to last had not just one passion. In fact, they had a portfolio of passions. And not only did you want to unbound your, you know, untie yourself, unfetter the bondage of denying you your passions, because that's really what people remember about you when they meet you. Gosh, you know, he or she was passionate. They believed in what they were doing. It made them happy. It made them, damn, you know, fun to be around. Passionate people. We always remark about that in others. We know it at a visceral level, because we know even that what we say is only kind of 20% of what people hear. 80% ends up being that experience of being with another passionate person. That's how valuable it is. I mean, you can monetize your passions and should try. And sometimes you end up combining them. You'll take I produce Broadway musicals, so I'm an investor. I'm a marketing guy. I'm interested in music, but not good enough to be on stage, so I produce musicals and realize that voyeuristically I can use some of my skills and honor theirs, you know, and celebrate theirs. And so we found that, you know, the greatness really comes usually from a portfolio of passions coming together, groups of passions that we have in our lives that help recharge us, that help drive us, that help us be pleasant to be around when things are tough rather than just such a bear, you know. A passionate person almost never sucks the air out of the room. They add to it. And so I think we all are, at some level, at some point in our lives, just a little bit desperate to live our passions. And I think people are very impressed and inspired when they find that you're willing and courageous enough to serve that way. And then when you do, you're just so damn good at it because you're willing to get good at it, because you're willing to do it more hours than the next guy. And that's the difference with passion.
Exactly.
You can do the research on deliberate practice, the 10,000 hours that it takes to get good at anything. Gosh, you know, if you're not passionate, that's too many hours. And if you are passionate, it may not be enough. I was talking to a great race car driver, Formula One driver, Dave Cuthard, who came to London. And here he was, you know, he was showing us the speed at which, you know, that over 200 miles an hour going around this track in Monaco. And as you sit in the driver's seat and you watch from a video perspective this car spinning around this track, it's thrilling this first time. It's terrifying the second time. It's dreadful by the third time. And you realize they got to do it 500 times. So someone raised their hand and said, how do you do that? How could you do that 500 times? And the guy looked back at him and said, so now that's the difference in passion. Can't you think about a few things in life that you'd like to do 500 times? And he winked at him.
Oh,
and
we
were all thinking
answer.
To ourselves, yeah, there is a few things we could do 500 times, and we feel good about it each time. Well, that's what passion is, though. See, there's a guy who is willing to And for him, 500 of those laps is never going to be enough. And that's the difference with passion. When you found something that you're passionate about, you don't ask that question. It's like, well, how do you do it so much? Well, if you're asking that question, then that's not your passion. And so that's the difference between good and great right there. The guy who's not satisfied with even 500 laps at that speed is obviously going to be better than the one who's either bored or terrified by the 20th. So that's the thing that we're often afraid to face, that greatness does come from actually deciding to become a friend to what you love. And that's what I felt in your voice. That's what the direction that you've taken in your work. And that's why I think you're having success with your sales training and leadership training, because, you know, it's hard to fake passion for very long. You can be a good actor, but at the end of the day, you're going to get rewarded because you really believe what you're doing.
Well, I love that phrase you just said, be a friend of what you love. That sums it all up. That is powerful. Well, Mark, I really appreciate your time today. You have given our listeners so many fascinating and very actionable insights. If our listeners do want to learn more about you and your research and your work, where can they go?
Well, I'd love to have them reach out to me. I do actually answer my own email. It's mark@markcthompson.com, and the website is markcthompson.com, markcthompson.com. We'd love to hear from you and love to be able to help. And we have some free research we'd be happy to pass along to you. And we wish you well with your leadership.
Well, thank you. Special thanks to our guest, Mark Thompson, again, for sharing some really fascinating and very practical insights with us today. And definitely join us here next time on the Huffell Group podcast. And remember, as always, selling is just too important to be based on anything other than proven science. We'll see you next time.